Hello everyone, welcome back. My name is Arna Sahu, host of Arna's News, where on this podcast channel, I aim to eliminate the gender gap in the STEM fields by featuring inspiring female professionals and highlighting their stories and accomplishments to further encourage girls.
Today on episode 72.
And I basically realized that, you know, statistics appears at the intersection of so many things, whether it's environmental science or pharmacology, or even, as you mentioned, running a business, right? There are so many things that go into business analytics. And so I think also for young girls, recognizing that they don't need to be pigeonholed into being just a scientist or just someone who works with technology. Like, STEM is an acronym, but it also is a broad spectrum of so many other occupations.
Today on episode 72, I'm pleased to announce our guest with you, Caroline He, the president of the Women in STEM, a global organization inspiring and empowering young women to pursue STEM and fostering awareness of their potential and overcoming gender disparity in STEM. More on Caroline, she's an individual who has always been fascinated by the intersection between data and the world she lives in. After taking her first data science course in her freshman year of high school, Caroline has always been searching for ways to apply her newfound passion for statistics, whether it's through connecting research with college professors or running her environmental nonprofit, A Sustainable Future. Her love of data has since evolved to ensure that no fraction of female high school students remain underrepresented or discouraged from pursuing STEM fields. In the meantime, she can likely be found reading, eating, or poorly singing Taylor Swift in the backseat of her friend's car. So thank you so much, Caroline, for being here today. Before we dive into the questions, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me and for that lovely introduction. I guess I'm just excited to see what questions you have prepared for me tonight.
All right, so my first question for you is, what inspired you to be part of Women in STEM as a president, and what is its mission behind it?
Actually, this is a funny story. I almost didn't get involved with Women in STEM because I completely missed the email about signing up for ambassadorship. So what happened was, in the summer of 2022, Maddie Stearns, who was the president of Women in STEM before I was, sent out an email broadcast to a lot of hopeful applicants who wanted to become ambassadors with Women in STEM. The issue is, this email was stuck in my spam folder for the longest time, because I was actually using my school email to reach out to Women in STEM. And that also meant that, you know, there's certain screening protocols that I can't control. And unfortunately, a lot of good stuff gets stuck in the spam folder. So if I just wasn't, you know, cleaning out my spam folder one day, I don't think I ever would have found out about Women in STEM. But seeing that message kind of, you know, it both brought me back to when I was initially applying and hoping to become a part of the organization. And it also reminded me that, you know, I probably need to apply soon, just because the deadline was coming up in a week. But I think what originally drew me to Women in STEM in the very beginning was, again, both that surprise factor, but also for the fact that, reflecting on the clubs at my school, I realized that we didn't have a club specifically for, you know, women in STEM. And I would say that was interesting, just because I come from a background where there were a lot of girls in my grade who were interested in, you know, pursuing science, math, and medical fields in the future. And we just didn't have one specifically pertaining to women. And that's kind of when I initially found out about Women in STEM. And I've been really glad to be growing with the organization as well.
I love that. I mean, it's a really funny story as well. You know, it was in your spam account, so maybe you might have not even seen the email, but you did. And, you know, you decided to apply really quickly because of the deadline. And, you know, here you are, from, you know, applying for ambassador to president, which is a super amazing feat. So kudos to you. Yeah, I love that for you. And just taking initiative, seeing something that might have been a problem, not in your current environment, but globally, and wanting to address it and being part of an organization that does so. I love that.
And I think that's one of the main appeals about Women in STEM as well. It's the fact that, you know, we're able to create impact both locally, but also multiply that impact, just because we can open up chapters across the country and even in some of our chapters internationally.
Absolutely. And my question for you is, how does your own journey or background in STEM contribute to your passion for empowering women in these fields?
Yeah, so previously I mentioned that I go to a high school where a lot of people are interested in pursuing STEM fields, and it's actually because it's a vocational school, meaning you apply specifically for the chance to go to a high school that's more oriented in STEM. But one of the biggest disparities that I noticed, even from day one, you know, when I first walked into the classroom, was that in a class size of 48 students, only 17 of us were actually female. And then I looked at the ratios for the other grades. We actually had a math problem about this. I'm pretty sure when I was a freshman, the sophomore grade was maybe 14 girls to however many boys. The senior class was maybe 16 girls to however many boys. And then the senior class was actually a class size of 24. And I'm pretty sure only 10 of them were girls, which is a bit better when you calculate those ratios. But it just really proved to me that, you know, despite the fact that we're, you know, in these positions where we can make change, the STEM gender gap does still exist, even if, you know, you're not facing it firsthand, facing the really severe consequences of it. And I think another part of my fascination and background in STEM was just the fact that I was raised in a family full of scientists. My mother, she works in clinical oncology. My father is a software programmer. And so being raised in this environment where I not only had access to a bunch of careers, or at least exposure to a bunch of careers I could pursue in the future, but also having a lot of family friends who were also in similar fields, that really opened my eyes from a young age to what was possible for me, not constrained to my gender. And I think coming from such a background also makes me recognize that this is not applicable to everybody, right? I'm extremely fortunate to be in this position where I have both exposure and encouragement to pursue STEM, but this is definitely not true for many other girls. And I think, first of all, recognizing where that inequality lies in my own community, but also broadcasting it out to a larger community, that was what really appealed to me about empowering women in STEM in particular.
Yeah, no, I love that. I mean, it might not be applicable to one person, but they can definitely make change wherever they go. I mean, especially what I think is that the big gap of, you know, women in STEM and like the gender gap in STEM is because a lot of girls, they're not taught or exposed to such amazing fields. Like when you envision a computer programmer, you probably think of Steve Jobs, you know. He's very, now he's, well, he's not really living, but, you know, he was really rich and, you know, he was white and he had like a lot of opportunities with him. And you might not see that if you see your own skin tone, if you see your own gender. There's not a lot of role models in STEM for us. So I feel like that's where a lot of girls, they kind of get pushed away to go pursue something else. And I think that's something that we must focus on. We must target ourselves and our efforts to encouraging more girls, specifically like younger people, like middle schoolers, high school students, elementary school students, because there's so many classes out there that are willing to help girls, and so many people in STEM, and just helping them, enabling them the access to be like, oh yeah, you can do it. I believe in you. You have the power. You know, someone else is pioneering in your field, and you know, and doing everything they can to help you. I feel like if we enable that type of platform to let girls know that they can do it, then we'll definitely be able to close the gap a little bit further.
Oh yeah, 100%. And as you said, you know, representation matters. Exposing young girls to other powered women in the STEM fields, that's what matters. And there was an interesting study done by the American Association for University Women a couple of years ago. And what they found was that girls as young as being in third grade were actually discouraged from pursuing STEM even in the classroom. So these biases, even if implicit, for example, encouraging girls to play with baking toys, perhaps instead of construction blocks, you know, all of these contribute to the STEM gender gap in the long run. And so, as you said, if we're going to start deconstructing it, then we have to start when we're younger and when we still can get exposure and, you know, really understand what we're able to accomplish when we get older.
Absolutely. And I feel like as we
focus on one side of the branch of, you know, focusing younger girls, I feel like the other side is also retaining more women in STEM, because a lot of opportunities kind of go towards men because people think that, oh, maybe he should lead the team instead of her. And I feel like if we retain more women, you know, in STEM, and there's like a lot of people that actually do this, they like consult, it's pretty cool. But, you know, there's like two different sides of, you know, focusing on younger girls and focusing on maybe the people who are actually in the workforce as well.
Yeah, I'm actually, not to turn this interview on you, but just from your experience seeing, talking to a bunch of women in STEM, have you noticed that maybe there is a bit of a mentality shift between the older generation and the younger generation? Namely, because I know that the older generation sometimes recognizes that they had to work hard to be in those positions, and therefore they may want to help the younger generation out more. Do you notice that there maybe is a bit of a gap, but also a bit of a bridge between these two generations?
No, yeah, because both sides, you know, both like the people who've actually experienced it and are in the workforce versus the people who haven't, they both have this type of mentality of wanting to work towards, you know, empowering other girls, because, you know, they kind of see themselves when they see, you know, other girls tinkering with toys in high school or like tinkering with their program. So I think there's like that mentality of wanting to, you know, be better and try to trailblaze. So I definitely see that mentality as well. I haven't been able to interview that many, you know, young people, more like people in the workforce. So I can't really say too much and I can't really compare, but I think it's there. Yeah.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah. And my question for you, which is a great segue, is how do you see your organization contributing to or supporting your broader mission?
Yeah, so as I mentioned before, we're really interested in helping young girls recognize their agency and their potential in STEM from a young age. So whether this involves, you know, reaching out to girls who are of the high school age, or even having girls in our chapters create outreach opportunities to maybe elementary schoolers or middle schoolers, it's all about building that network and that ladder down where we're able to work from the top down or the up. From bottom up, whatever analogy you want to use. Again, yeah. It's really about building those connections, making sure that young girls realize that there is representation and that they have exposure. That's how we can, I think, slowly close the STEM gender gap.
Yeah, I mean, as you said before, representation does matter. Sorry, I can't even say that word, but it really does matter. And allowing younger girls like me, especially, I actually never wanted to get into STEM. I thought it was super boring because I always saw my dad, you know, just code away. And I thought, to be honest, that was really boring because I was never exposed to different paths in STEM. Like, you just don't have to always code. There's so many other things you can lead in tech. You don't necessarily have to code. But there's so many different places, and I was never exposed to that personally. So I just wanted to be a businesswoman and just roll with it. But you know what? During COVID, I actually learned how to kind of code in JavaScript, so that was pretty fun. But honestly, I feel like something that we should definitely tell people, if we could summarize it in this interview, or something that I want to say, is that don't just think that STEM is just like boxed into one thing of coding. Like, sure, that's in technology, that is a specific subset in tech, but there's so many different places. There's artificial intelligence. I mean, that does have coding, but there's, you know, you can bridge things within computer science and fashion. You know, you can work in, you know, medicine like your mother. I think that's really cool, but there's so many different paths you can teach in academia. And there's so many things that a lot of people aren't exposed to when they're younger. So they just think that, oh, when I think of STEM, I think of coding, but that's really just a myth.
Yeah, thank you so much for shedding that light on how the STEM field is so multifaceted. I know that even for a field that I'm interested in statistics, there are so many different applications even for, I guess, one field, right? So I was actually researching into this a bit earlier because I'm a junior and college is approaching, yay. And I basically realized that, you know, statistics appears at the intersection of so many things, whether it's environmental science or pharmacology, or even, as you mentioned, running a business, right? There are so many things that go into business analytics. And so I think also for young girls, recognizing that they don't need to be pigeonholed into being just a scientist or just someone who works with technology. Like, STEM is an acronym, but it also is a broad spectrum of so many other occupations.
Yeah, and I feel like if we really know that when we're younger, because honestly, when I was a kid, I thought STEM just meant computer science. And I was like, ew, I don't like that. But if we're really taught that, oh, these are the different applications that go on behind the scenes, that what you might not really see, that could be a little bit more helpful to people and could honestly kind of further bridge a gender gap in STEM, which is something that's really amazing. All right, and my question for you is, what are some of the biggest challenges you faced as a woman in STEM, and how have you overcome them?
Yeah, so I think for me, things haven't been as bleak as they could have been. You know, occasionally there will be times where I feel like I'm maybe not as supported as some of my male classmates, not given the same opportunities or even approached to in the same way simply because I'm, you know, a woman in STEM. But on a whole, it hasn't been that bad. I would say that what I've noticed maybe in some other areas has been a lot worse. My chapter for women in STEM in particular, we work with a bunch of young girls from under-resourced communities. And one thing we've noticed is that there are lots of girls who are in kind of enrichment courses, but for some reason, most of that isn't translating to high school, as in they enjoy the enrichment courses they're taking, but aren't interested in pursuing it further because they view it as too daunting or maybe too challenging, and that they feel that their teachers won't be as nice or that they won't be as good. So, you know, unfortunately, these issues do still exist, but I think that if we, you know, collaborate, we can really try to resolve them. One other anecdote I did want to bring up is that my Women in STEM chapter is also built into a Technology Student Association chapter. So we kind of operate under the same wing and like the same Google Classroom. And the thing is, I noticed that the breakup of TSA was very, very largely male, and that Women in STEM was very, very female. And I do think, you know, that it's great to get maybe more boys and young men exposed to having women in STEM, because again, representation matters. And if we're also educating maybe the opposite gender about it as well, it's not just about encouraging our girls, it's encouraging young boys to also support young girls.
Absolutely. That's amazing. And I love that, because a lot of people think that, you know, women in STEM is something that's just super recent, like we just want to do this. But no, it's actually been here for a very long time. And, you know, we just want to have girls have like the same resources and be able to do things and reach their full potential. And, you know, the more people who know it, the much, much, much better. So we can all make a difference in the world. All right. And my question for you is, have there been any role models or influential figures in your life who have shaped your dedication to empowering women in STEM? If so, how have they inspired you?
Oh yeah, first of all, hi mom, if you're listening to this. I think I mentioned, but she works in clinical oncology. And as a hopeful statistics major, that's also a field I might want to pursue in the future, because I know that, again, I'll have support in the field, but also because my mom will be there to kind of guide me through it. And I think, you know, since she's been with me for my entire life, I can kind of say that she's really played an important guiding role in really helping me understand my agency, and also helping me understand that just because I'm female doesn't mean I can't do certain things, and also because she's a pretty badass mom. But I would say that's pretty stereotypical. I do kind of want to branch out a little bit and talk about one of my favorite female role models. She was a businesswoman, so this might interest you. Her name was Anita Rodick, and she was the founder of The Body Shop, which was a small, well, when she started it, it was smaller, but now it's like a huge franchise that sells skincare products and, you know, quality lotions, etc. In fifth grade, we actually had to do a project on a famous historical figure. And many of my classmates chose, you know, like Queen Elizabeth or Thomas Edison. But for some reason, I felt drawn to Anita Rodick. And that largely in part was due to her, you know, very, very normal background. As she herself, I think, explained once in an interview, a lot of what has happened to her and a lot of her success in life had simply come from a happy set or a fortunate set of circumstances. So she was able to kind of recognize those circumstances and build upon them and really take advantage of them, which I thought was great. And also for the fact that she was really able to merge a lot of her different interests in her position as a businesswoman. So she was also an advocate for the environment. A lot of her products were environmentally friendly. She was a human rights activist. Her company, The Body Shop, was actually one of the first in the beauty industry to promote fair trade with developing nations, which I thought was really cool. And yeah, she was kind of able to use her platform to speak up on what mattered to her. And so, you know, especially for someone like me, where I realized that my major has the potential to have a bunch of intersections at a bunch of different fields, I think that was a lesson that I needed to hear, that I didn't need to be constrained in just one field or one major and stick with it. There are always different areas to build connections. And then, sorry, this is a complete 180. I also wanted to shout out my leadership team really quickly. I was on the leadership team this year, but also last year. Last year as the director of digital media. And I feel so, so fortunate to be exposed to such an inspiring community, you know, that constantly pushes me to become a better version of myself, whether that's a teammate, a classmate, you know, the leader of an organization. They're the ones who keep me going and keep me knowing that I'm supported no matter what we do and that we're also in it together.
I absolutely love that. Like when you were talking about your mom and, you know, your role model, Nita Roderick, and also your leadership team, you had like this biggest smile on your face. I absolutely loved it. But yeah, just knowing that you can find role models in STEM, because my role model is Sally Ride. She was the first American woman to go to space. Super, super cool. I made a whole presentation on her in third grade where I had to like dress up as her. It was really fun. It was on a budget. So that was really fun. But yeah, no, my role model is Sally Ride. And I feel like if you have a role model who can really shape your way, who like looks like you or who has the same interests as you, they can really help you pioneer yourself to go, you know, solve that problem, to raise your hand for that question you have, and do a lot of cool things, because that's what role models do.
So well said. And do you mind if I ask, were you guys doing a wax museum?
No, we weren't. It was actually just like a presentation, because I'm pretty sure it was Women's History Month, but it was really fun. Yeah.
That's interesting, because for us, it was a wax museum. So I showed up to the auditorium the day of. Everyone else was kind of filling in their little booths, and they were wearing like fun wigs or had like giant ball gowns on. And then I literally just walked in as a very like skinny and scrawny fifth grader in my mom's business suit. And it was a sight to see. But I was happy about the arrangement, because my mom actually let me purchase a couple of the Body Shop's products off of Amazon. And if you haven't, try them, because they smell really, really good. Yeah, so inadvertent shout out there.
No, I'll definitely check out right now on Amazon after this. But yeah, no, my project, we just like did, I don't know what I did. I just used like Fanta bottles or something and just pasted it on like a back of a piece of cardboard to show like, you know, the engines on the back. That's what I did as my little DIY project for Sally Ride.
But. And again, not to pivot it back to you too quickly, but has kind of space exploration always been a field that you've been interested in? What was your kind of motivation behind choosing Sally Ride?
I don't know. I was just looking at like a list of people's names and I thought, oh my gosh, space. Because I've always, you know, loved space. My favorite planet is Neptune. And sadly, it's going to leave sometime soon. But I think that it's an amazing field, you know, space. It's, you know, astrophysics, I think it's amazing, but I don't think I would probably take that route. I feel like it's like too much on my end, because I was gonna try to pivot towards, you know, computer science and, you know, building a business. Maybe it'll be like a personal, you know, side, you know, project of, you know, exploring space. But for now, I think I'll just focus on, you know, the other side.
Yeah, totally valid.
All right. And I'm going to ask you my second to last question, which is, how do you hope the Women in STEM organization will inspire your members to create change in their own lives or communities?
Yeah. So for this question, I'll actually dive a little bit deeper into how we primarily hope to accomplish these initiatives. And we mainly do so through three branches. So first, that's mentorship. Next, that's outreach. And finally, that's networking. And so on the surface level, they may seem kind of similar in what they stand for. But at Women in STEM, we really try to hone in on the different dimensions of each kind of branch. And we really, you know, we're extracting it and we're using it to the fullest extent. So for example, for mentorship, we can think of, you know, the classic club advisor figure, right? Or we can also branch out and see how industry professionals can bring valuable insights to club members. So a lot of that is really reaching out to other people, which may sound like outreach, but this is specifically to other people who can offer us a perspective that may be shaped by, you know, a longer experience or more time on this planet. And this even applies to other Y-STEM clubs. So we actually have a mentorship program where newer clubs are given the opportunity to learn from more established clubs. And so far, this has been a great success just because we've noticed that a lot of our club members and chapter members are really just interested in learning from each other or learning from other people. And I think always having your mind ready to learn from a different perspective, that's what's going to bring a lot of growth and eventually a lot of change in their own lives, in the community, and in STEM overall. Next, I guess I'll tackle outreach. So outreach is more, you know, branching out and reaching out to other people who you maybe admire or want to know more about. So for us, we mainly try to focus on outreaching to those younger. And as I mentioned, that would be your middle schoolers, your elementary schoolers. We're really trying to bring a piece of our organization into those environments to foster, you know, a more holistic environment where girls are able to be exposed to STEM from a younger age.
And then I love finally, that.
Yeah, I promise we're reaching the end, I promise.
No worries.
So the final one would be networking. And that would just be, you know, reaching out to other people in the community, not necessarily maybe those who are a bit more distanced, like, you know, the elementary middle schoolers, but those within your very own school. So for example, hosting a drive with members of another club, like the TSA, who knows? And so really, you know, building a network of allyship is what we're trying to accomplish, because breaking down the barriers to female participation in STEM is by no means a role restricted to just one background or one ethnicity or one gender. It's something to be shared by everyone if we actually want to see lasting change.
I love that. Building a network and an ally of, you know, supporting people, because, you know, STEM is something that, you know, encouraging more women to go into STEM, more girls into STEM, isn't just, you know, pigeonholed, as you said before, to just one type of group. It's to, you know, everyone, for everyone to be a part of. And my last question for you before we end off is, do you have any last pieces of advice or a message you want to share with the audience today?
So I'm actually going to hark back to one of our earlier conversations. I think this was the very first question, and it was about the time that I almost forgot that I had an interview scheduled with Women in STEM. My advice there would just be, if you see opportunities, don't be afraid to reach them or take them. And as I also mentioned in my story about Anita Roddick, you know, finding these areas that may just seem like an unfortunate set of circumstances, but ultimately wielding them to benefit you and looking for opportunities in those circumstances, that's really, really important. And I think that's something that I've learned even from just my past experience with women in STEM. So I guess to kind of build off that first question, if I hadn't found out about Women in STEM, I wouldn't have been exposed to this community, and I wouldn't have been able to reach a position where I'm able to touch even more girls and, you know, speak up on the issues that matter most to me. And then with Anita Roddick, I actually forgot to mention this, but her products, they were made in bottles that could be reused and refilled. And that made her a smashing hit with the public, because sustainability actually wasn't a common business practice or industry practice at the time, but Anita Roddick and The Body Shop really changed that. And so she was able to kind of use that as a selling point. And the thing is, it had occurred naturally just because her shop, as a small startup, had a shortage of bottles. But by wielding that, you know, what could have potentially been the end of her business and using it to achieve success, I think that really holds a valuable, valuable message and lesson.
I love that. I mean, don't be afraid to take on those opportunities. It's okay if you have to end them, but don't be afraid of just saying, okay, let me just, you know, reply to this. And, you know, sometimes your flaws might be your greatest strengths. You never know. So never downplay on those. And, you know, who knows, maybe it might be your next opportunity in the unknown.
Yeah, I actually wanted to build off of that really quickly. I wanted to make the disclaimer that, you should not jump at maybe everything. Try to prioritize maybe your mental health a little bit. I think for me, this was a lesson that was a bit hard learned. I used to be in a stage of my life where I felt like I had to overcompensate for everything, and it was just emotionally and physically draining. And so once I took a step back and kind of reevaluated the things that really mattered to me, that helped me reshift my focus. And ultimately, it helped me come to a more, both, first of all, stable mindset, but also to a place where I actually enjoy what I'm doing.
Absolutely. And sometimes those opportunities might have to be things you have to let go. But honestly, you might learn that, oh, hey, maybe you enjoy this activity, but you hate this one. Maybe you can dive deeper into that branch of the field, or maybe you could just take a quick step back.
Yeah, 100%. Thanks for reiterating that.
Of course. Well, thank you so much, Caroline, for being here. I absolutely love talking to you. And, thank you so much for, having the time to be on this call with me.
Of course. Thanks for having me again.
And here are my 3 cents on this episode with Caroline. One, balanced well-being and productivity. Prioritizing mental health fosters a more balanced and healthy state of mind, enabling individuals to manage stress, enhance focus, and maintain higher productivity. When pursuing fields beyond STEM or any career, a healthy mental state can greatly impact one's ability to navigate challenges and complexities effectively. Two, creativity and diverse perspectives. Engaging in non-STEM fields offers diverse experiences and perspectives that can significantly contribute to creativity and innovation. By exploring arts, social sciences, or other non-STEM disciplines, individuals can gain insights that can be applied in problem solving and innovation within STEM or any other fields. This interdisciplinary approach allows for a broader understanding of issues and encourages unique solutions. And three, empowering young girls in STEM. Understanding the perspectives of younger girls in STEM helps in creating more inclusive environments and opportunities. By acknowledging their experiences, challenges, and aspirations, it becomes possible to address barriers and biases. Encouraging and supporting young girls in STEM fields can lead to a more diverse and innovative workforce. Mentorship, representation, and outreach programs can play pivotal roles in empowering and inspiring younger girls to pursue STEM careers. Thus, that concludes the episode for this week. If you want to know more about how I relate to these amazing topics, then stay tuned for upcoming episodes. A free way to support this show is by leaving it a 5-star rating and a review on the player you are listening to. Let me know what you enjoy about this podcast, as it's a chance to tell me what you love about the show, and it helps others discover it too. Once again, thank you for finding me, and I hope we stay in touch with each other. Zito, you're listening to Arna Sahu, the host of Arna's News. Toodles!